So it's a bit easier for me and a bit easier for everybody listening. So again, welcome. My name is Robert Montgomery. I'm the chair of the local planning panel this afternoon. I'll just tell you a little bit about the panel, how we operate, then I'll introduce the other panel members, and then we'll move through to the items that are on the agenda this afternoon. This is a panel which is constituted under New South Wales planning legislation, and the purpose of the panel is to facilitate a public hearing, which is what this is, and also to provide independent decisions and advice to councils. On the agenda tonight, we've got three items. One of those items the panel will be making a decision on, and the other two items the council has asked the panel for advice about what decision should be made. Just introduce myself and then the other panel members. I'm a town planner by background, have some 35 to 40 years experience in local government, state government, private practice. I've worked at various councils. I've also worked for the New South Wales state government in the Sydney release areas, Sydney growth centres, and most recently, for the last 13 or 14 years, I've been operating my own planning practice. I have a number of corporate and private clients, and I also chair and sit as expert member on two other council panels in Sydney, and I also provide independent advice and assessment services for a number of councils. So that's me. I'll ask each of the panel members to introduce themselves. Tina? You've got the...
My name's Tina Christie. I'm engaged as the community rep for this panel, but I'm also a planner. I have 20-odd years experience as a planner in both local councils and private practice as well.
Oh, Helena.
Helena.
I've got 29, nearly 30 years experience. I've worked in state government and councils. I'm also on a number of other local planning panels, including Campbelltown and the City of Sydney.
And Brendan?
Yeah, I'm an architect and urban designer. I've got about 30 years experience designing large buildings and urban environments. But also I'm on a number of design review panels around Sydney and Canberra. So I do look at a lot of big buildings and developments of all scales and apply local planning rules but also amenity and urban design standards to them.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll just ask each of the panel members whether they have any conflict of interest to declare. Helena?
No conflicts.
Brendan?
No conflicts.
Tina? No. And none from me. Just for your information, the panel members have each signed a declaration that they don't have any conflict of interest. That forms part of the public record. Is accessible on request from the council if necessary, but that's a very important part of this process, that this panel is completely independent of the council. Now, when we... I should tell you that this meeting is being recorded for the record, so obviously anything you say will be recorded on the record, and I'd also ask people to refrain from making any... I guess aspersions or comments of that, personal comments of that nature in relation to other speakers, and also in particular to listen in silence. So if someone's speaking, listen to what they say, even if you disagree with them. We don't really need any interruptions or any comments from the background. When I call your name, we hear from the submitters first, so residents who have made submissions and have registered to speak, we hear from those first, then we hear from the applicant. Each speaker has 5 minutes to make their presentation to us. The council staff use a timer over there, and when you hear a sound, you'll know that your 5 minutes is up, and if you haven't finished, we'll ask you to wind up quickly. Bear in mind, the applicant and their representatives, when they're speaking, will probably take more than 5 minutes because our expectation is that they will be able to respond to things that have been raised by the submitters that have spoken before them. Following the meeting tonight, the panel will adjourn to deliberate. We won't be delivering any decisions tonight, so that sort of the public part of the meeting will be completed. After the meeting, the panel deliberates and our recommendations and decisions are published on Council's website, usually within 3 working days. Okay. The first item we have for consideration is an application at 6 Bulwarra Street, Kiraville. It's a development of 4 semi-detached dwellings and a subdivision into 4 lots. The application is put to the panel for determination tonight. So I have one speaker registered who's not part of the applicant's team, and that's Mark Eckerman. Is Mark here? Please, if you'd like to take a seat, introduce yourself. If you can start with your address, that would be good. And obviously we'd ask you to focus on how this may impact on your amenity of your property.
Thanks, Robert. My name is Mark Eckman. This is 3 Bulwarra Street. We're across the road down a little bit from the development side in question. I do appreciate your time this evening to speak to the panel. And I guess raise my concerns and objections around what this development means to us. I do speak on behalf of a range of residents.
Thank you for that. Okay, thanks. Is there anyone, before we hear from the applicant's representatives, is there anyone else who wanted to speak who didn't register? No? Okay, we have Georgia Sedgman, consultant town planner, and Alex Tarasenko. Did you want to both come forward if you want to together, or just pull another chair up? That's fine. You know, it's clear, obviously, the panel has read the report, visited the site. We've read the objection submissions that were received in response to the notification. And obviously, we have read the legal advice supplied by, on behalf of you, and also the legal advice, the council's in-house legal advice as well, in response to that, which is probably you haven't seen and probably won't see. All right, so I'll throw it over to you.
Mr. Chairman and panel members, thank you for your time today. My name is Alex Tarasenko. I'm director of Assurance Holdings Number 3, which is a property owner. I speak on behalf of the property owner. I thought it would be best if, given Council's assessment report, that I provide some background and context to our DA. It's been a process that we've gone through in consultation with Council, and we obviously have some different views, and I thought it would be helpful to the panel if we describe the process that we went through. I wanted to talk first about our strategy for the development. The property is in a highly sustainable infill location. It has good access to public open space. Karuna Park is just 100 metres away. Kira Oval is 450 metres away, walking distance. The access to shops and convenience facilities is very good. Kira Village is just 450 metres away. And the access to great schools is 500 metres, walking distance to Kira Public School, and 600 metres to Edmund Rice College. The access to public transport, the free bus shuttle, is located just 200 metres away from the site. And which would take residents to either the University of Wollongong or to CBD or other locations. Secondly, we recognise the housing affordability challenges that face young families and young professionals in our state. This is a very real problem. Household sizes in New South Wales are shrinking. By reports, the number of 1- and 2-person households is projected to exceed 50% of all households by 2036. And of course, housing affordability in New South Wales has been recently recognised by the state government as being a crisis issue that faces the state. Most houses in Kiraville that are being developed, whether they're townhouses or single dwellings or dual occupancies, are large 4-bedroom dwellings with double garage. Our vision for the development was quite simply to provide quality, affordable and sustainable housing for young professionals and young families. Our instruction to our designer was very simple. The design was very efficient, yet functional 3-bedroom semi-detached dwellings that are 100% compliant with LEP development standards and DCB controls. And of course, our instruction was that the design should be architecturally desirable and aesthetically pleasing. Our initial design was prepared and lodged with Council as a pre-lodgement application for 40 semi-detached dwellings in April of this year. The pre-lodgement meeting was held on the 14th of May 2019. And there were two major issues of apparent disagreement with Council, which impacted on other matters. The two issues that needed to be resolved are the characterisation of development, whether it be semi-detached or multi-dwelling, and the calculation of gross floor and floor space ratio, and that related to two items, one including the party walls in the GFA calculation and therefore the FSR calculation, and the void above the stairs. The first issue we addressed, and we addressed this before we lodged our DA, was a characterisation of the development because of the potential flow-on effect that that would have with respect to a number of the development controls in Chapter B1 of the DCP. We had indicated to Council at the pre-lodgement meeting minutes that we had obtained draft legal advice and that we would submit legal advice to them. That Council Assessing Officer indicated upon receipt of that legal advice, they were obtained advice from in-house counsel before the meeting minutes were issued. PDC lawyers issued a legal advice on the 24th of May 2009, supporting a semi-detached warning characterisation for the development. That was prepared by Alex Kelly of PDC lawyers, and Alex is here today. Is available to address any questions that there may be from the panel. Subsequently, or just 4 days later, the pre-lodgement meeting minutes were distributed by Council on 28th of May. The pre-lodgement meeting minutes agreed with PDC's opinion that the development is correctly characterised as a semi-detached dwelling development. And that is can be seen on page 3 of the pre-lodgement meeting minutes. The second major issue related to gross floor area and therefore the calculation of the floor space ratio. The pre-lodgement meeting minutes indicated that the common walls are to be included in the gross floor area calculation, and we agreed with this and amended our preliminary plans to include the common walls in the GFA calculation. The area above the pre-lodgement meeting minutes indicated that the area above the stairs, that is the void, needs to be included in the gross floor area FSR calculation. We did not agree with this. Subsequently, we engaged PDC lawyers to provide a legal opinion, which was forwarded to Council on 28th of July, again before the DA was lodged, indicating that the void must be included from the GFA, or in their view, must be excluded from the gross floor area and FSR calculations to comply with the definition of the GFA under the OEP. Subsequently, on the 12th of August, so about two weeks later, Council provided a written response to PDC agreeing with their legal opinion. We have that letter here if the panel would like to see that. That was an email that was sent to us by Council on the 12th of August, and I'm happy to distribute that to the panel if you'd like. So we proceeded based on that, those two major issues having been resolved. We proceeded with lodging what we believe is a fully compliant DA, and that was lodged with Council on the 18th of August. I guess the question can be asked, why do we go to such extraordinary lengths to resolve the major issues before lodgement? And the answer is quite simply, our part of our vision was to prepare to submit a highly sustainable and affordable development, which is architecturally superior and one that was fully compliant with Council's requirements under the LEP and the DCC. On the 8th of October, a few weeks after we lodged our DA, much to our surprise, we received an email from Council indicating that they were going to refuse our DA. We also have this email available for the panel to review if they'd like. The reasons given for their proposed refusal of the DA is the incorrect characterisation of the development and the incorrect method of calculating the GFA and FSR, the two issues that were already resolved in writing between the applicant and the council. As a result of that, we felt that we needed to get a peer review, a planning peer review. We hired MECO, who have done a lot of business with in the Sydney Growth Centres, and so we obtained that peer review from MECO. MECON's peer review agreed with, firstly, the semi-detached characterisation of the development, secondly, our method of calculating GFA and FSR, and thirdly, that our development proposal was highly compliant with the DCP controls. Georgia Sedgman from MECON will obviously discuss these matters in greater detail after I finish with my presentation. The Wollongong Local Planning Panel assessment report that was prepared by Council made no less than 17 references to the development being characterised incorrectly as semi-detached rather than multi-dwelling development. Interestingly, not once does Council's report make reference to PDC's legal opinion, except that it attaches it to the report regarding the semi-detached characterisation of the development, nor Council's agreement with this opinion in the pre-lodgement minutes. Further, Council's report makes no mention of Council's early agreement with the PDC's legal opinion regarding the calculation of GFA and FSR. Once the assessment report to the panel came out, we were compelled to get a second legal opinion from Addison's lawyers. opinion was received late yesterday and was lodged with Council this morning as additional information. The opinion provides further clarity and states the following, and may I quote a couple of relevant parts of that opinion. And by the way, we have that opinion. We suspect that the panel would not have access to that given it was lodged this morning, but we have that here.
Response to that, the panel, I mean, the panel can't really consider advice received the day of the panel meeting, particularly
no,
advice,
we understand that.
Advice that the council hasn't had a chance to review. I think we have been provided with that with the advice, the additional advice, but as to how much weight to put on, we're not in a position to.
No, we understand.
By anybody in the time frame.
Absolutely, and I've got, hopefully the panel understands that once the planning assessment report to the planning panel came out, we really had very little time to.
Can I also ask, you talked about the pre-lodgement. What happened at the second pre-lodgement meeting?
No, we only had one pre-lodgement meeting.
Because I noticed that the advice of the first pre-lodgement was once you address these issues, recommend that further pre-lodgement be appropriate.
Okay. Given that the two issues were green and writing, and they were the main two issues that drove most of the other issues.
That's another question too. You say that the panel, the pre-lodgement advice agreed with your classification of zones.
Yes.
And it's in the report?
Yes. It's in the pre-lodgement meeting minutes and it's in the statement of environmental effects.
Is it in the council report tonight?
No, that's the point, is there was no reference made apart from the legal opinion of PDC lawyers regarding the characterisation of development. There was no reference to that, to the content of that legal opinion, nor did that correspond effectively through the pre-lodgement meeting minutes. There was no reference to that council's report whatsoever. I have an extract of the pre-lodgement meeting minutes, which is page 3, if the panel would like to.
Well, I don't think we'd like to look at an extract, we might have to look at the whole minutes.
Do you have the whole minutes?
If someone's got those.
Yes.
Going back to the first pre-lodgement, and you've been talking for quite a while,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think the panel's any of the wiser on how do you address the issues that were raised in that panel meeting in relation to building character and form, amenity, setbacks, access and car parking. I don't think we're any the wiser about that.
Well, what I'd like to do is go through the DCB compliance table with you. That's the last thing that I wanted to do.
Well, I don't know that we've got time to actually go through it piece by piece. Are you saying
your
assessment's different to the council officers? Is that what you're telling us?
I can interject. I think a lot of the comments that came during the pre-lodgement minutes actually relate to multi-dwelling housing controls, not sending them to dwelling housing controls.
Right.
So once the legal opinion came through and council responded in writing saying they accepted that it was sending detached housing, then those controls that were raised in the pre-lodgement no longer apply because they were the multi-dwelling housing controls. So
you had that memo from the council.
Yes,
fairly important too.
Yes.
And look, I must say that we could have a discussion for hours about how to properly classify these buildings, and I must say the panel's already had a discussion probably for a couple of hours at least this afternoon, and I don't think we can resolve that tonight. Just what the classification is, because all the information we have is inconclusive in terms of legal advice, etc. But I'd be certainly keen to see some correspondence you have from the council, which attests to that early in the piece.
May I approach the panel?
Yes,
Chairman,
please.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is the pre-lodgement meeting minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The third page is the one that refers to characterisation of the development under planning. That's correct. Yep.
Yep.
And that goes from there down to here. I do have that third page for the other panel members. If you'd like me to So that relates to characterisation of the development. This is the correspondence we received as second legal opinion, which states that they agree with our opinion regarding the gross floor area of the development. If I may just touch on the compliance table of Chapter B1, there are only just some minor issues there because, interestingly, Council's compliance table relates to semi-detached dwellings, not the multi-dwelling development. So if we to go to the rear of the assessment report, there is a compliance table there, the last several pages. If I can quickly hit on the issues of non-compliance only, and there's only a handful. The first one is under section 4.2, maybe I can wait till Alan's going to find that. It's on the first page of the compliance table. 4.2 says compliance no. 4.134 metre to lot 4 upper floor balcony. However, we refer to clause 4.6.2.1e of chapter B1 of the DCP, which states that private open space areas, including balconies and decks, must not extend forward of the building line by greater than 900 millimetres. This is fairly standard in many DCPs that I've worked with, and the balcony for lot 4 extends about 870 millimetres into the front setback and therefore complies with that clause. There's a matter on third page regarding drainage design which is unresolved. The drainage has been designed in accordance with Chapter E14 of the DCP, and we believe that that will be concluded as such once there's a full review done. Under 4.8, building character and form, again it shows a non-compliance, and it states the scale of the development and size of the dwellings in consideration of the available site area results in the built form being masked, sited closer to the secondary street frontage by Warra Street to accommodate all required elements of the development. Under clause 4.2.2c of chapter B1 of the DCP, the secondary building line must be set back a minimum of 3 metres. We meet that requirement. So we have not sited any closer to Warra Street than is permitted under the development controls of the DCP. It also states that lot 3 and 4 car parking is a dominant feature closely located to this secondary street boundary, which creates a number of issues relating to a non-compliant crossover width, access issues for occupants, and encouraging cars to park across the road, which raises safety and access concerns. Clause 4.10.2.2 states that carports must be set back behind the front building line of the dwelling. The front building line on the secondary, secondary street is 3 metres, and the carport is set back at just over 3 metres. There is a further statement down there that developers not considered the appropriate with regard to scale of the built form and positioning on the site, and Georgia will address this in greater detail when she gives her presentation. Regarding the further, it's the...
I'm really going to ask you to wind it up there.
Yeah, okay.
If you've got something else, just quickly.
Well, it just talks about dwelling entries. That we're supposed to have a dwelling entry to Tonga Street and Balwara Street.
Yep.
The control just says that it needs to address the secondary frontage, which we've done.
Look, I understand what you say, and you know this is not just about numerical development controls, and maybe the planner can respond to some of these issues. You have placed a fair bit of weight on the pre-lodgement minutes, and that's fair enough because the pre-lodgement minutes say essentially that it would be considered a semi-detached dwelling. So there's no doubt about that from how it would be considered.
sound, make this sound the wrong way. I'm not as concerned about numerical compliance as what I'm concerned about the resultant design and how it sits with the site.
Yes.
And how it fits with the character. And there are some fundamental things in the pre-lodgement about building a character, about having the entrance to lot 4 on the side street, not the other street, talking about bulk and scale, and I don't see how that's been addressed, and that's what concerns me.
If I could just mention very quickly some of the things that we've addressed that were in the pre-lodgement meeting minutes. So one of them related to horizontal and vertical articulation across the Tundra Street. We have done that. One related to the, addressing the Barwara Street frontage, because what we have presented, and I have what we have presented, was quite frankly not refined enough the design, and it was very plain addressing Barwara Street. We've done that. Another one related to the amenity of the private open space for lot 4, and we've improved that and put planters and so forth. That is no longer an issue for council. Another one related to having a carport and private open space above that for lot 3. That has been removed. And another issue related to access up the stairs to get to from the carport to the dwelling on lot 3. That has also been addressed. And then we've also addressed, and this has been submitted as part of your package, the bulk and scale of the development. George, I wonder if you could
So obviously you don't have the luxury of having the pretty VA plans there, but they were a much more solid form of development, which is why the design's undergone significant changes before lodgement in response to those pre-VA minutes. And part of that process was not just responding to the direct comments, but also doing a broader assessment of the Balwara streetscape and taking into account the scale of the adjoining development to the east to be a little bit more considerate of the existing Balkan scale, where and you would have seen from your drive around today, a lot of the developments here are two stories, but effectively three stories because the garage goes underneath. So what it means is we've been able to provide a ridge height that's actually below what's already adjoining next door in order to be a little bit sensitive to the location. And also by not providing basement parking, as is provided in most of the locality, it's been able to reduce the form so that it is only two stories at any point. It never actually provides that three-story element that's present in a lot of these locations just given the slope of the land. In relation to looking at what else is in the locality, we looked at number one, the North Street, which is the northeastern block within lot within this block. Look at an aerial. Here is 6 Balwara, here's number one, the North Street. And that seems to provide the three-unit multi-dwelling which council has consistently spoke of in the development assessment report, saying it would be more appropriate as a three-dwelling, multi-dwelling development. So we looked at one in the immediate block to see what the outcome of that was, and that does actually provide the third story or basement level as car parking. And as a result, the Balkan scale is very excessive in that style of development. So that's one that's been approved and actually built now and provides the three units of multi-dwelling. And we think we gave the designer some good instruction to not produce this outcome, because as you can see, it's all one built form. There's no separation, there's no relief between the buildings. It's very tall by effectively having this basement level, and the front setback is...
That's a multi-unit dwelling, is it?
That's three multi-unit dwellings.
And that's on a block.
So that must be providing what the multi-unit dwelling asks for as well.
Yes, that's right. And that block...
Visitor parking and landscaping beside the driveway.
So two garages to each, a visitor parking, which is where you get the dominance of the hard stand at the front of the building.
And that block is 20 square metres smaller than ours.
Mm-hmm.
That building that faces Bernal Street.
Is that on a corner? Is that on a corner? That one's on a corner? Yeah.
Slightly wider than our total width of our buildings, but we have a 2 metre separation between our buildings. And of course, it effectively shows as a three story dwelling.
So we've got a GFA of 377, it's got 363. So I think a lot of the comments within the assessment report that I've struggled with in the peer review is obviously that the bulk and scale of a multi-dwelling development doesn't appear to actually be any more sympathetic to the area. And I think by providing the two pairs of semi-detached, it actually gives you that relief and greater opportunity for
So that's heavily landscaped along the Tundra Street frontage. With this one on one Burnell Street, it's essentially concrete.
And I think one of the big design objectives was to not exceed two stories anywhere, because that's what we saw as what could be most responsive to the locality, where there is a lot of quite excessive height just within the basic parking that seems to occur.
I thank you for your time and for your consideration of our application and my comments. If I can hand it over to George again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and panel. I think I've touched on quite a few of the points, so I'll try and keep it brief given that everybody's got other matters to do tonight. Essentially, I think the most difficult situation our client has found themselves in is that they believe that there was two major issues and some design matters, and that all of them have been addressed prior to lodgement. Obviously, we've received written advice from council addressing both of those being dealt with already. I don't need to tell anyone on the panel what the definition of semi-detached and multi-dwelling is, because it's a panel dominated by finance, who would all be well aware of that. I think, you know, now there's been two town planners opinions on this and two legal opinions on this, and the strongest point that's come through from all of those opinions is that obviously the definition of multi-dwelling houses requires three or more lots on one lot of land, three more dwellings on one lot of land, and semi-detached requires each dwelling on one lot of land attached to only one other dwelling. Now, again, I don't need to tell you about characterisation in terms of the court's position on that, but we're looking at the end purpose, and the end purpose of this application is four dwellings, two semi-detached pairs, each on their own block of land, and each detached to only one other dwelling. Therefore, we've all been unable to conclude how council assumes this is a multi-dwelling development when essentially what is provided is two pairs of semi-detached dwellings. We did a little bit of a dig into previous council applications to see how council approached this in other matters, and we found several examples where developments were approved as semi-detached dwellings when there was four. There's one such example on 9 Forest Way at Winona.
Forest View Way at Winona,
and that provides four semi-detached dwellings on 764 square metres. They stayed semi-detached dwellings. They were built to lock up. Then a subdivision certificate was issued. Then occupation certificate was issued.
And now, conditions were such.
And this occurred as well at the Bulleye Brickworks. It occurred as well in other examples on Forest View Way we found. And these are lot sizes that are the same, with the same number of semi-detached, and nothing about how that subdivision occurred in line with the occupation certificate rendered that a multi-unit dwelling. So we've struggled with how council has come to this conclusion, which is why our clients have sought legal opinions in this regard. Obviously, you don't have the luxury of the Addison's one, because it's only after the assessment report came out that we were able to obtain that. It's also very difficult, and I'm sure you would have found this, that there's no discussion really in the assessment report about why they're being characterised as multi-unit dwellings, other than to say council feel it's a more apt characterisation, but there's no detail there. And then, as Alex mentioned, the assessment report assesses against the semi-detached table, not the multi-dwelling table. So as far as semi-detached is concerned, we believe we have a compliant development. There's a couple of items which we touched on that we think there's been some interpretation one way or the other, and I don't think any of them are insurmountable or can't be resolved. I think really what it comes down to is definition of GFA and also characterisation. Now, in terms of definition of GFA, again, as a panel of planners, I'm sure everyone's aware of Guyver, Sutherland Council, where the Commissioner quite clearly said the voids above stairs are to be excluded from GFA because they are a void. So that's the advice we've taken. That's the first response we got in writing from Council, that they supported that view. And then obviously after lodgement, there's been further advice from Council that they don't support that view. Then, look, a lot of the DCP stuff we've already addressed today. I think in relation to the objectors' major concerns, we looked at the concerns of the objectors and also what was addressed in Council's assessment report. There was 10 main issues. The two that nearly all of the objectors spoke of was traffic and parking and access, and also bulk and scale. Now, in terms of traffic and parking, the DCP is quite clear that any dwellings below 125 square metres only require one parking space. All of our dwellings, all four, are below 100 square metres, so they're well within that size that they don't require two parking spaces.
I don't think you need to go into every single said, we know the distinction and we understand the impacts on the outcome as to if it's categorised as one or the other. So, as I say, you don't need to go to that detail. So, is there anything else that you...
I guess the only other point I've raised is just in terms of existing and future character. Again, you have an appreciation today from visiting the locality, but notwithstanding the fact that zoning R2, it's very much a low to medium density precinct. Robson Road, adjoining to the east, has about 11 of these types of developments existing, and the character of the area does seem to be really providing a mix of one and two-storey dwellings and also multi-dwellings, semi-detached, dual occupancies and residential flat buildings as well. So we found that in terms of character, a semi-detached development is actually quite fitting for the local area and for this little bit of
tea. Any questions?
My role on the panel is to look at these developments and examine their fit, their contextual fit, to look at their amenity, to look how the streetscape works. And so, you know, I actually, when I read, you know, it's overscaled or it's too much development on the site or whatever, I actually don't find that so surprising. I'm an architect. I've designed big things. I have to fit them into streetscapes and what have you. I think there's some evidence that this is overscaled, and that's where I'm coming from. I think I don't envy your position. You're on a street corner. You're standing out. The buildings currently are set right back. There's a very big fall to the street. By pushing your building into that setback, you're putting the mass of the building right close to the footpath. So these are things that are actually not just giving a visual impression of that, it's really physically evident. So, for instance, even though you've done some drawings of streetscape images, this building's set right back here, this building's set back right here, pushing this way is really pushing against the character of the area, I think, because it's actually saying the whole site is full. When we look at the elevations, up here, we see the same thing. We see the same thing, and I think anybody could sort of interpret that. It's not just me, that it really looks as though it almost looks like a row of terrace houses or something coming very close to this boundary, but also being up in the air. You know, when I look down here, I see this whole area that maybe could be conceived of as a garden once. It all just looks as though it's pretty shabby. So, I mean, my interpretation of what's in the report, all the legalistic stuff I get, but to my mind, when we have a site that has certain rules on it, the site also has encumbrances and it has a physical quality that sometimes means that you can't achieve everything that you're entitled to achieve. I've looked at sites on this council that has a river running through it. You know, I mean, obviously the building cannot achieve all the FSR because of that. I think in your situation, I've been asking, you know, how do we define primary and secondary street, and it seems a little bit arbitrary that one or that one, you decide which one. But it looks to me as though they both have a certain encumbrance of them put there by the landscape that comes down in the setbacks on the one hand, and on the other hand, by this very pronounced change in level, which apparently adds 2.1 to the flood to the height of your building, because it's a very constrained view that a pedestrian or somebody will have looking up at the building. So, look, I would go back to the semi-detached classification just for a moment. The design, height and siting of a new development must respond to its site context, taking into account both natural and built form features of that locality. The design of the development must have particular regard to the topography of the site. Large, bulky forms are to be avoided, particularly in visible locations. Are you getting the drift? This is really saying... I'll hold up. You hold up that. I'll hold up that, and let's see which one wins. What you're showing is a projection of your buildings and that building.
Okay, I'm just looking at the top one here by Warra Street.
Yes, 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 okay. So I'm looking, you see where that house is positioned? Right back there. You've pushed your one to 3 metres against the topography.
That's what the development control states. And we're allowed
yes, yes. So here you are. No, excuse me. Mm-hmm. I'll speak.
Yep.
These are the numerical rules. But the amenity of the site, the shape of the site, and the topography of the site also have to be considered in how you site the built form. You know, like on lots of projects that we all do or what have you, you have the right to build this density, but you have to prove it fits. You have to prove that it works with the streetscape. You have to prove that it works in a way that's amenable with its neighbours. I'm suggesting that the shape of the site, being on a corner, makes it highly exposed, which rings the bells around this character, building character and form statement, and also the topography. You know, the topography is really pronounced, and in a way it works against you. So for those reasons, I would say that the comments about the amenity and so forth, they actually have some underpinning in truth. Now, the other clues I would point out, that there may be there's too much on the site, is in two of the, in one of the semi-detached buildings, we'll call it semi-detached, the bedrooms are too small. They're 2.4 wide. Now, so the apartment design guide, which does not apply to these dwellings, it applies for a form of residential development that is much more constrained. You're on a big site. When you're doing an apartment building, you're highly constrained. They say the minimum size bedroom is 3 metres, excluding 3 metres in either direction, excluding wardrobes. So even if I were to say, as a relevant standard, to apply to a more spacious site, it would seem as though your buildings are suffering for not being able to fit. I've already talked about the fact that you have this apparent relationship of a ground level of one of your buildings, 2.1 above the footpath, which is only 3 metres away. That doesn't sound like the kind of context that I looked at today. There's also, and I know you can have a legal discussion about it, but there's also seems to be some contested GFA, like how much you're producing. There are also problems with your car parking that seem not to quite fit into the site on the lower level, meaning that when you come towards your carport, you're needing to actually have the space before you get into the carport to leave your car, I think. I think that's that you rest. No, they do have a rule. They do have a rule.
The UCP requires that the carport gets set back behind the secondary on a corner line.
Okay.
Behind the secondary front setback. The secondary front setback is three meters, and on every corner block that we've ever developed on a wall zone, that is the case, 3 metres, regardless of the adjoining property. I'm sure the panel is aware that section 4.15 3A of the Act states that when there's a development standard included in the DCP, that the determining authority cannot require a tougher standard than that.
Okay, then there's the neighbour's concern. The neighbour's concern that four dwellings appearing, and instead of following the actual intent of grouping of four dwellings on a site of that size, we're sort of managing legalistic to avoid it. Like, for example, perhaps a visitor space is asked for. And these would be imposed if it was the other way of reading the site. Or perhaps where you have a driveway, you have to have large landscape between, you know, the property next door and your driveway. Or where you have a group of gardens, you have to have pronounced landscape barriers between those gardens. Now, the intentions of them is not to prevent your client from making money or prevent... It's to actually provide better amenity for the future residents living there. So, you know, that it can be a bit difficult to argue your position because it's all somehow based on, well, it's our right to do that. Whereas where I'm coming from is probably saying, well, you have to prove that it all fits.
And I guess the difficulty we have there is this is the multi-dwelling where there is no landscape.
No, but I can't relate one to the other because that's flat. Well, that's okay. It just happens to be a flat elevation you're showing me. Because
right.
It all.
I think yeah.
Look, I think I can shortcut some.
Maybe.
What I'm hearing from the applicant is we comply with all the numerical controls, and therefore it should be approved. Now, what Brendan's talking about is the controls in the DCP that can't be measured numerically. They're the controls in the DCP which could be arguably more important than the numerical controls, and that's things like amenity, fitting in, taking the topography into account, and those sorts of things. And I think that's where the problem is that there's been no addressing in the application that I can see of those non-numerical matters, and I think that's where the panel agrees with what Brendan's saying, is what we're seeing is, although it's numerically compliant, and I've got to tell you, everyone sitting at this table has seen numerically compliant developments which are horrible. That's not necessarily the measure of just because it's permissible doesn't mean it's approvable. And I think that's what the panel's saying and what the council's saying is that there are issues beyond those numerical compliances that really need to be considered and haven't been addressed, I don't think.
And I guess that's where the design team thought that they were addressing that by dealing with looking at those streetscapes and looking at the existing height. You know, we might have that fall from the street, but all of the other houses that we've been comparing to have also had that situation. So notwithstanding the fact that we come a little bit closer to that frontage, the appearance of height we felt was actually reduced in our scheme because we've been able to reduce it to two stories and provide that landscape setback. So there was a genuinely, belief.
I don't think we've seen that. I'm not sure what that is.
We have it in here.
Yes, this is probably why. I know you have.
Yeah, it's
which one is it?
It is.
It's up. I saw it before. It's here. It's a streetscape. I'm not actually saying this is I'm actually saying it's very difficult on a corner. There's a 30. Here it is.
I just wanted to say that I agree with what Robert said. I think the issue is not so much non-compliance as impact on the consistency with the character of the area and reflecting a design that actually responds to the topography of the site. Because it is sitting up so high now, I know you've pointed to other developments. Those developments are in a different location. There may be, from your point of view, that you might consider them to be significant and reflect on what you've done in your
this
falls from rear to front as well. So it's the same.
But what I'm saying is that is totally different to the way you've designed. You've designed down the slope, sideways, if you like, on a corner side, and you've only showed us a frontage. I don't know if it's a corner or not, and how they've dealt with the corner. So I don't know, and a lot of them are a bit, but some of them seem to be early townhouse type developments, which you can have an opinion about those. Some of them are garages dominating the street. I don't know about the density of those. I don't know about what applied to those, what the controls were and when they were built. Frankly, I don't think that necessarily helps your case, because where this is located is nothing like this sort of environment. Talking about character and streetscape, if all these houses were located, say within 100 metres of these two streets, they are.
Yeah, these are all, so here's our site, and this is all the folks' location for the
So they're all within 100 metres. I mean, that was just
an argument. They're on the main road.
I'd say 150.
They're all located on that main road. Aren't they?
None of them, looking at your site plan none of them contribute to the streetscape in the immediate locality here.
No, they're all on a main road. It's a different context completely.
Yeah, so it's just that number one that also faces the technical street.
Yeah.
I think to say it really plainly, what we're saying is we think you've tried to get too much on the site. Basically. It looks like everything's squeezed so tightly that it's causing an overdevelopment of the site. And perhaps if you were, the one that you talked about, which you think is too bulky, it actually deals with its own traffic and parking issues on site. We're talking about, as the objector said, we're talking about potentially 12 bedrooms, potentially at least 8 cars, and you've got 4 car parking spaces. And I know that's a control issue around the way you characterise the development. I perfectly understand that. But that other development deals with that issue and provides, I haven't assessed it, but I assume it deals with...
Can I clarify that? Our development has 6 car parking spaces, and it only requires 4, because you've got 2 car parking spaces in front of the garage, and lots 1 and 2. So there's 6.
Doesn't that conflict with the council DC plan?
No, we actually have more parking. No, stack parking is only if you require 2 parking spaces and they're behind each other. This doesn't require 2, but it provides 2.
So you can provide extra parking spaces on the street. You're not required to.
But this is on the site.
I think you're missing the point. You're going back to the numerical controls. This is not how good design happens. It doesn't happen out of a numerical control assessment, and that's the point we're trying to make. I think it's fair to say that the panel believes that there is an appropriate design for this site. And the panel believes it's probably not 4 dwellings. You may surprise the council and come up with something different to this that can suggest 4 dwellings, but the design that's in front of us now and the configuration in front of us now is telling us, yes, it complies with the numerical controls, but it's an overdevelopment of the site because of the other reasons in the DCP.
Yeah.
Now, that's really the situation. We can discuss all night whether it's quite a numerical control. But as Helena said, you've got neighbours pointing out that that it's not complying with other developments. You're pointing to other developments that are providing that higher level of parking. Brendan has made the point that you're really weaving through a legal situation to have this approval. It's not coming out of good design, and I think that's the real issue here. If we had a good design that worked, in our view, then I don't think there'd be an issue. But what we've got here is something that fundamentally is not responding properly to A, the site constraints, particularly the slope, and B, the character of the area. Mm. So, we can sit here for hours and talk about numerical controls. I don't want to, because I don't think that really helps us.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that concludes item one. We've got you for item one and welcome to stay for the other items, but there's no need to, there's been no further discussion, so thank you for your attendance. I move on to item two, which people have an opportunity to leave, so we're not disturbed. Take a seat, and if you can start with your address. And
yep. Chair Russell Worthington, I'm living at number 9, next door.
And let us know your concerns, and given that you live next door, I think the panel is very keen to hear how your understanding of how this is going to impact on your property and your enjoyment of your house and your property.
Yeah, well, I mean, I live. Sort of aware that it's pretty much a done deal by the time I get to the previous one said the show, but it's not. I'm also aware that most of the case in the application is precaution. So I've got a friend who's involved in all that sort of thing. But there's just a couple of items that do concern me. But one of the first one is the house on the We've got a couple of bedrooms facing this, but I out onto the veranda and a couple of French doors. One of those rooms, we've only got the French doors, that's in the window, so we get good airflow through. But right outside those French doors, we're going to have a water tank, plus an air conditioning room. And the water tank, I assume, is going to operate the same way as the one we have, which is connected to the toilet.
The other concern I have is with the landscape. So is there anything you can do about that?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is. Okay. Well, I'll preface this by saying I've been in horticulture for 40 years. I have my own retail nursery for 28 years, and I worked in the old parks in London for 3 years, and 10 gardens here for 3 years, plus private landscaping. And I'm not quite sure what to make of this permit. It's basically a lot of them, basically coming down to the plants. I don't know if you got that there in front of you.
Yeah.
So if you look at things like Sosigium australis resilience, for which they're going to use 33, they've got a mature height of 2 metres. Well, the mature height on those is minimum 5 metres, possibly 6 or 7 metres. Spread of 1.5, spread of those is going to be at least 3 metres. And you have to put 33 of them. And I know what they're doing. They're obviously going to be a hedge. But even the council's sort of recommended planting groups from the fences is a metre. And these are all not going to be a metre. And you wouldn't want it, because even if, I mean, they've put them in obviously with the intention that they're going to be kept as a hedge, but you can't get up there and by that problem is going to be a hedge. And we'll also not necessarily have any idea what the plan might actually do in the end. So, and partly that concerns me, because building credits are relatively interesting to plant. My garage is next door to that. There could be issues with root problems with the concrete floor of the garage. It also applies to a couple of the other plants I've got there. We're putting in a couple of Banksias at the back, and they've got mature height of 3 to 4 metres, so they can grow 12 to 15, and there's quite a few around the area that are 12 metres high. So they grow well down to that too. And the same with the Arminosum, which is native frangipani for out the front, they'll often get up to 12 to 15 metres high as well, which may not be so much an issue in the front. But I think the Banksias will be an issue in the backyard because of what they're keeping. There's already, close to my place, within a metre of the back corner fence, a lily-pilly romanii, which is a beautiful plant. I think it's grown to 15 metres high with a spread of 8 to 10 metres. And half a metre from that is a thing called the Gaines, which is West Australia where you live. While not necessarily a really tall grower, they do end up with a very big trunk and quite a spread on them. And while it would be nice for both of those plants to stay there, it probably makes no sense that the girl can stay in one of them. Would at least need to go, probably be to read the bird. But, oh, I don't know why we couldn't bank it in there either. You know, it's like it's overplanted to me. And then and part of the issue then becomes further down the track. It's, if those little things are going to be a hedge, how are they going to keep them as a hedge? On my side of the fence, that becomes my issue to look after.
So it's a credibility issue. And what about I don't know, I looked at the frontage. Like, a big issue, and it's been written about in the report, is its character.
Yeah.
It's a streetscape character. So, you know, we were a little bit underwhelmed that somehow it didn't seem to be trying to contribute to the street or its context.
No.
I mean, would be there any comment about...
It's not really going to fit in, but I just assumed that that was, because I know the little committee that's usually involved in all this sort of stuff, I just assumed that they'd sort of given up. I'm not an active member of it, but I do get there.
But do they have a kind of preferred palette or a preferred way that, you know, does it get that instructive for somebody trying to make a development?
I think everybody would like it to look pretty much as it is, because it's still reasonably plain. I mean, the house that I'm in, we bought it 5 years ago, but I've only lived there for 9 months. It was just an original hole.
You're on the right-hand side of looking at the house? Yes.
On the right-hand side. So it's been done up, I suppose, tastefully. It fits in. I mean, I don't know whether it may have been objections to what the person did. But
Well, the rules support increased density.
Yeah.
And they're within heights.
Yeah.
But there's a way to do it that's appropriate.
Yeah.
But I would have thought landscape has something to do with that.
Well, yeah.
And
well,
street frontage. And
yeah, yeah. Well, street frontage is difficult on that place because it's just going to be like two garages, basically, two driveways, a couple of plants.
Yeah. And look, there's
that can be relocated.
Yeah, they can be. There's some of the concerns that have been raised. So, in the report by the council officers and certainly by the panel, I mean that the streetscape and the gardens are very much part of the streetscape. I think is a significant issue here. So, I've no doubt that we'll be seeing you here again, and we would look forward to your input there. But it might be a different plan at that stage.
Yep.
That you're looking at, and if it pans out this way and there is another application and you are given another opportunity to come here, if you have a look at the material, then you can probably, it's a better indication of, you know, you can actually review it all before you come. I'm not suggesting that's an issue, but I'm not criticising you, but not necessarily. Generally, we try to have at least one panel member the same if a new application comes in. That's usually what...
A number of us have been on other panels, though, that dealt with applications in George Street.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And the issues that you're raising are pretty consistent with what comes up with every one of these. All right.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have Dr. Stephen Etheridge. Yes. Take a seat. Pull up another chair.
town planner that's very experienced in duplex or duplex developments. An expert in that area. Another issue was raised was the parking. The council's DCP does allow for stacked parking or two parking. Not to say that maybe the people that do buy it or rent it would have, may only have one car anyway. So we thought we dealt with partially by the council. We even changed the facade to make it more like ours in the area. As you visited the area, right opposite is a pub and a bottle shop. Around the corners, the town houses that look very similar to some of the Department of Housing structures in Wollongong. So I think we're actually certainly enhancing compared to some of those other properties, and it's enhancing the local character. It would be nice to keep a little park, but, you know, some changes to be reasonably expected, given the zoning of the area. I thought some of the criticism of the council was subjective, not objective, but after listening to the very valid points the panel members have raised, I can understand those more. As I said, I love the area, I live in the area, and I want to continue using the area, and that's why we did a scaled-down development and not an R3 development. We did a medium-density development, which is complying. We thought the code might come in and complying in every aspect to that, the CDC, which is subsequently been delayed. I think that's most of what I would like to say, Andrew, for you.
Yeah, I guess, well, first of all, we apologise that area, as Russell said, the houses are where the board pop up, the structure
issues which I'm sure Brendan will talk to around amenity within the dwellings themselves in terms of getting natural light into them. But I think there's something that can be done here to achieve a development which will be consistent with the character of the area, but it's just that you're not there yet.
Is the fact that we didn't do R3 and did R2, is that considered? Didn't do R3, didn't do a three-story, did an R2 development, is that considered favourable light?
Well, no, because the panel's role was to consider the application before. So if you say we could have done a bulkier, bigger development, and you would be, and it'd be worse than this, it's not relevant at all.
Because you wouldn't necessarily get approval for that
because it still wouldn't fit in with the character of the area. What you're allowed to do, potentially through the controls, you still have to prove up that that's acceptable based on the character of the area.
I think it's also important to note that it's a brand new development. The simple things like deep soil doesn't even comply. So, and I don't harp on the miracles, but given that you are doing a smaller development than what you can potentially achieve, if you can overcome the streetscape, also get your architect to look at just simple fundamentals of the private open space, how it works on the deep soil, to get a better outcome.
Brendan?
I think all the issues around streetscape and so forth that were raised, but I think it might be, the deep soil, but also understanding why is deep soil important or why landscape's important, why streetscape, because I think this is embedding your proposal with value. And I think the more recent render you produce seemed to be moving towards a path that was trying to be informed of what's the right character, right? Because formally, it just seemed as though it was really out of character. It really did just look like a project home being built in another suburb or something. So the more you can inform yourself of that, I think the better. And I think a drive around the car and just looking at some of these, you can call it coastal style, I don't know how to classify whatever these things are, but looking at some of the timber buildings, see if you can find two-story ones. See if you can find two-story ones that have a rendered base or a brick base. Photograph them, have a think about them. Or, you know, maybe at the front, you know, there's a veranda or something rather than just windows. You can find these little details and actually find, oh, that does look comfortable, right? Then the landscape, I don't know where you're meant to get the right advice, but it didn't look, you know, but just the house and the landscape working together. I actually think the semi-detached is a good model, but it seems as though down here it's a rarefied model.
Yes.
I don't quite know why. But the issues around the car parking, I'd even think, just try and get in the council's shoes. What are they thinking? They're thinking, oh, there's going to be two professional people constantly moving out into the traffic trying to move cars. Well, try and think through it. Is it the case that is that liable to happen? Does that happen once a day or peak hour? When does that happen? Because I actually think it's quite reasonable because I see it in other houses. Up and down the street, I see a garage, single garage, and another car space. I'm sure they've got two cars. So just think through it a little bit.
Yeah. Brendan, but it doesn't help your argument when these are both four-bedroom dwellings.
Yeah.
So, you know, by saying, well, you know, we can have less parking or we can have stacked parking, which, as Brendan said, the panel may not necessarily have a concern about that. But, you know, when you're looking at two four-bedroom dwellings, you're really looking at not just the possibility that there's going to be two cars, but the reality that there's going to be two cars and the possibility that there's going to be more. They're the sort of things, and I think if this wasn't a request for review, if this was a development application that the council were asking for advice, I suspect that there might be the opportunity to manoeuvre with some design changes. The difficulty we have with a review is that you're time limited. And so if there was a process, if the panel, for example, was to recommend to the council, and the council may or may not adopt our recommendation, to recommend to the council if there was a willingness on the part of the applicant to look at some design issues. The difficulty would be that the application has to be determined by, I think it's January. Yeah. So there's not much time, and unfortunately the legislation doesn't give any leeway with that. Because it doesn't trigger the requirements for determination under the guidelines issued by the Minister for Planning. So where the council believes there is some issues associated, you know, some issues that would help to have some additional advice, then that's when the council will put it to the panel. The other reason why the council staff have decided to put it to the panel is it is a review, and although it's not mandatory to refer it to a panel, for the purposes, I guess, of procedural fairness, it's good practice to bring an application for review to a panel, because really you're saying the council's made a decision, you're asking for the council to review that. So from your point of view, rather than the council administration, if you like, making the decision about whether to review the previous decision, the fact that you've got an independent panel making a recommendation is sort of, I guess, more in favour of that independence, and it's a better process. I mean, if the council has the ability to determine it, and if they did, and the assessment, the determination has to be made by someone who is who has a higher level of delegation, I'll put it that way, than the person who made the original decision. That person has decided that it would be good to get the advice of the panel.
But it would be good. It would be good to take up that opportunity to tune what you're doing. And I think one good place to start is to register that one of your houses doesn't get any north light. That's very peculiar, you know, and it's not really, it's peculiar from an architect's perspective. It's not peculiar out there. Lots of people, they face their house south for God knows what reason. They just do it. I go up to Byron Bay recently, I noticed every single house faced south. I don't know why they do it. But anyway.
Is that where the water is?
No, it's more like, well, you know, you put your bathroom there, don't you? You put that there. And it's sort of not thinking about it. But both houses could be absolutely beautiful light-filled houses if you treated that as an issue. If you treat it like, you know, some people design these houses, they have the garages. Beyond the garage, they have a courtyard. If they share the courtyard with a fence, a wall in between or whatever, the light does actually get in. But then light comes into your living room. You know, so your house is facing the wrong way, but you can get the light in. If you had the opportunity just to think about that, it might say the bog's somewhat different.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, but I mean, the value is entirely different, because it wouldn't be like, oh, well, we've got one sunny house, we've got one dark house. We've got two beautiful houses in a really desirable part of the world. Like, it's really valuable. So I would take the opportunity to do that and to sort of just look at the vernacular and not do things on your facade, oh, that's historical, I'll do a stripe there. Don't do that. Just look at these buildings the way they're made, you know, like the gables go like that, they're held up by poles. You know, it's not a heritage thing. It's just being kind of soft and simple with the architecture.
Taking cues from what's already in the strip.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is what I alluded to before. Make sure when you do a review, you do have the opportunity to submit amended plans.
Yeah.
You could have addressed the issues that council raised in the beginning. But also, you know, you've sort of put us in a difficult, and council in a difficult position, because you've sort of waved this in front of us and said this is what we want to do, which looks a lot better and looks a lot more like the character of the areas, but the plans don't reflect that, so you can't approve that. So you need to, you know, really be particular about what you're seeking approval for.
From my point of view, I think if the outcome of this is that the council refuses your review, and that's, as you know, that's the recommendation, I would not take that as necessarily a negative. I know it's easy for me to say. I would take that as a cue of a set of rules as to what's going to be approved. And I think, I mean, sure, you've got legal remedies, you know, you can appeal and those sorts of things. That's entirely up to you as to where you go after a decision's made on this application. But my recommendation would be that, as Brendan said, this is a great site. It's got great potential. The issue that is in your way is the current design. And I think if you started afresh with a new application, I think the outcome would be and should be very different in terms of approval.
And don't be scared about talking to your neighbours either, because you knew at the beginning that they didn't want their air conditioning unit there next to their bedroom.
Yep.
And you could have put it somewhere else and they wouldn't have objected. So that's really the
problem. Yeah, and it seems to me like you've got a potentially a good resource about local landscaping, horticultural knowledge as well with your neighbour. Yeah, no, that's good. But look, I don't think so. If the council officer's smiling at me because the council thinks so. The panel doesn't think so. But if I can put it in these terms to you, when an applicant's asking for a control to be set aside, which I guess that's essentially what's happening here, and I said this out on site to the other panel members, you basically need to be looking at a design and an outcome and a solution for the site that says, look at me, I'm so good, you won't care that we've got stack parking. So if I can put it in those words, good design can lead to some relaxation of certain requirements if it's justified.
Look, but there are other things too, Robert. I mean, there's that building and there's that building and they're close to the boundary and your one's pushed right back. So you're sort of making something that's less intimate here. Now, we know there are rules that say the garage has to be further back, but, you know, if you just sort of thought, but my frontage has to be more out there like them, even if you drive through a piece of house to get to that carriage, I don't know, even if you drive through like a porch, or you're actually starting to take cues from your neighbouring properties, and that might mean that above that there's a balcony or something, that there's plants in the balcony.
Yeah.
It's starting to look more relaxed, and you can feel like I'm joining the streetscape, and your neighbours can feel like, oh, they're joining. You know, because density, quite frankly, is necessary all over our cities. And so, you know, showing how to do it, you know,
yep.
I think it's taking cues from what's there. You might find your building shifts. You've got more space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was, when you said, we're sorry, our planner can't be here, my immediate thought was, would have been good to have an architect here.
Yeah.
And look,
times don't fit on every side, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. One on, but in an existing neighbourhood, very hard to pick the right one.
Yeah. And it's fair to say that in a lot of panels that we've had situations exactly like this, and there's been resolutions between the panel and the applicant's architect. So, you know, I think that's the future, that's the direction of this one. So thank you very much for your attendance.
Yeah, thank you.
I hope we've made some sense to you. Don't want you just walking away thinking, well, I've got a refusal, that's the end of it. I think it's the start of it.
Thanks
very much. That concludes item two. And item three, we have Thomas Silvius, who's available for questions.
Yes.
And look, thank you for your patience. You've been very patient sitting through all of that. Interesting. Yours is the only item on tonight that's recommended for approval.
I was very happy about that.
I understand you have some finishes to show us as well.
Are you the designer of the property?
I am.
All right.
And I think I'll probably start by saying I don't think anyone on the panel has any issue with what's being proposed. But with a building like this, it succeeds or fails on the quality of the finishes. Not just from our point of view as a consent authority, but also from your point of view as an owner. It's a huge investment, and it's one that you want to get right. So... thank you.
Do you just want me to talk about the materials, or do you want a background? Is it just about the materials?
Well, I can ask a few leading questions.
Oh, okay.
When I saw the big frames, I didn't even read the notes. I just thought, oh, he's working with big timber sections. That was the immediate thought. There's an architect down in Marimbula down there working with really beautiful timber frames and making houses a bit like this. And but it's steel, is it?
The reason it's steel is I went to get structural advice because I knew that possibly the project would be not controversial, but, you know, a bit modern beach house. And I wanted to make sure that all my floor to floors,
uh-huh.
I left enough space for structure.
Uh-huh.
And what happened was the pre-DA design had a smaller cantilever, but that was there before shore building line as well. And so what I decided to do to try to kind of make that issue a bit better is pull the low ground floor back to where the foreshore building line, which gave me about a little over 6 meter cantilever. And there was no way to do that with timber.
Because so you can't make the joints rigid and stuff yet. Yeah.
You can't get the 6 meters. So my intent was that always for it to be timber.
Even though...
to make it look like timber.
Throughout America, there are bridges, houses that are bridges, that span a very long way, and it's just because they're built so well in timber. But, you know, but I can understand that. I've come across that. So thanks for reminding me.
So, I mean, it's quite a heavy structure. The beams are 310s.
Yep.
The slab's like 225 at the cantilever. So what I would like it to be, if I could do it in timber, I would love it to be timber. And then this is the product that's cladding. And I've chosen that because it's quite brutal there. I didn't want to have to paint every 2 or 3 years. So this is an intrinsic FC sheet that has sort of the rounding to the face of it. But I think we'll give it a nice little like visual shadow, you know, shadow lines through the day.
Mm-hmm.
Never needs to be painted. And that means that really all I have to maintain is the timber cladding on the truss. So the intention is that it will look like a timber truss.
But it is steel, so you'll be seeing steel.
No, you won't be seeing steel.
How come?
Well, because I'm going to...
You're going to clad the... Oh.
Yeah.
I'll
clad
the steel trusses.
You know, I wouldn't recommend that.
Well, I didn't...
If it's steel, like, I don't know, Glenn Murcutt's a very good Australian architect you might have heard of.
I didn't think I'd ever get steel through, to be honest with you, so I thought...
No, but I mean just honesty. Just being honest about it, because then it would start building up, I reckon. I just think what looking at this design and just thinking, oh, I'm seeing everything, I'm seeing the truth of the matter,
yeah.
You know. It's cantilevering, it needs to be made a certain way, it needs to be supported a certain way. I mean, there's a lot of beauty in that.
Yeah.
So
it's expressed structure that you normally
yeah.
wouldn't. So that's the big idea of House Philly is to sort of express the structure on the outside and have kind of the depth of the walls, you know, 100 back from the face of the structure itself.
So are those walls that material?
Those walls are this, yeah.
Okay, all right.
So the house is basically three materials right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's the base that's sort of this kind of color in a masonry unit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the veneer, the GB veneer, so they're 50 mil high by 400 long, so they're quite sort of linear and just add, I think, a little bit of visual interest to it.
said, when I couldn't do timber, engineered timber trusses, I thought there's no way I'll get a steel beam through the...
No.
I think you will. I think there's nothing worse than steel... pretending to be timber.
Do you want timber or timber clad?
No, you want timber or steel. But I don't think you
want
to...
want it to look like...
Listen, I designed a building... I've got to tell you this. I designed a building once. It's really nice. It's next to Carriage Works in Redfern. Affordable housing. And there was an old shed on the site with big trusses. And I said, oh, this is great. You can take the trusses, remill the trusses into screen. The builder spoke to the client during construction said, oh, no, there's a cheaper way to do this. You get this aluminium with this sort of timber wallpaper on it. I freaked out because what it meant was anybody going there goes up to the timber and taps it and it goes, dong, dong, dong. Oh, my God. It's really freaky. I can't sleep when I think about that.
Anyway, they've applied for cladding.
Have they? No, but I mean, it just looks like steel to me. I don't know. I would actually think more about it.
So that's the cladding for the steel.
Yes.
Yeah, this
Does the cladding offer any additional protection from the steel? It doesn't change the maintenance regime. Obviously, with steel in that environment, you're going to be painting it, repainting it from time to time.
There's epoxy paint that now is a 15-year
okay.
warranty, and the trusses will come on the site supposedly from the structural engineer as they are, so we won't have to fiddle with them.
Yep.
Sydney Harbour Bridge. How often
have to touch things up, and obviously it's quite a the environment is pretty harsh.
Yeah.
But we're leaving all that to you.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really interesting design, so we're just seeing... These are just... But the stone boundary wall, we thought... I mean, I sort of look at it and it's just there, and it's sort of all motley and everything, but it's got some kind of charm. But on the other hand, I don't see the role for the wall at all. I don't see any role for a wall in that location at all, in which case... I would have thought, if you don't repair that wall, could you do something good with the stone?
Yes, I'd be happy to use the stone on site.
Whereas,
like landscape or...
Because none of us like your new wall.
No.
We don't like your new wall.
New wall.
The wall that goes like this.
Oh, just the fence.
That's the thing that wall. I just don't see the point
is
of
that
it.
To stop the public walking across the corner
it's
of your
not
land?
Walking, but on the holidays, people park the whole way up.
Yeah,
the
that's what I was
wondering.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would start to park in our
yard.
What about trees?
Like
this year, someone camped in our yard.
Oh,
so
did they?
These interlopers from Sydney come with four-wheel drives and bull bars, so trees aren't...
Why wouldn't you look at the side?
Yeah.
The idea was to try to have a boundary, but...
Yeah.
So my intention was always that it will remain feeling like that, and that's why I wanted something that's really low in front. I don't feel like I need protection from the public or they can look at that, but I don't want them to...
So what if somebody took the existing wall, and you may or may not like it. I sort of get the impression you don't really like it.
I hate it.
But what about if somebody creative, somebody sophisticated, somebody with a good design thought, how can I remake these blocks of stone?
But I don't think it matches the house. It's one of the reasons I hate it. First of all, it's just a whole different architectural language.
Sometimes that's good. But the landscape
is
contextual.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
It's raised
the area.
The council initially...
We recognise that it's not heritage, but we think it has some character in that it also extends up the street.
They want to get rid of theirs. They hate their
Oh, they want to get theirs.
Okay.
So,
well, that's something that we'll consider.
We're obviously trying to do something architecturally. And so, So I'd be happy to use the stone on
that's right, and he can put one down the stairs. Yeah.
I would prefer not to use it as
okay.
Well,
and I'd be happy to entertain, like if you said, well, I'd be happy to entertain doing it as some kind of like, you know, black bar or something that maybe just was a little, maybe more in keeping with the design. I just
and low,
like,
low scale?
No,
yeah.
I want it to be low.
Yeah.
What is that at the moment that you're showing? Like,
that's just the masonry, the same masonry units that are making the bark base of the house.
Okay, so it's the same thing.
So it would be.
But what's this on top of it?
Oh, it's this is a great thing because you can actually have them wrap this out. It comes in flat panels as well.
Yeah.
And so if you'll notice, I don't know if you can see in some of the renders, there's sun shading devices that are made out of this around the internal courtyard.
Mm.
And so what they'll do is they'll route that same diagonal pattern into this. It'll come in sheets from the manufacturer with those. Can you see it on the... But you can see here, so here, this is the view of the internal courtyard.
Mm.
So that product will get routed out, the sheets will get routed out, and it'll make sun shading devices around some of the property as well. So it's just that same, it's sort of like, and I'm probably going to do laser cut screens in the inside of the house that are sliding for, you know, so it's using the same type of, you know, triangular motif throughout the whole house. It's sort of, because when I, you know, I was just trying to do something with that third wall.
Do you know, there's just a few other things I thought, if you don't mind. I actually think you'll regret not having this built.
I can't see what you're
doing. Oh, sorry. See the courtyard's there, and then I think you'll need more for your dining. And that's where the cantilever goes from, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I somehow feel that you'd like that for your table, because it seems a bit thin to get past your table. Just a thought.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing is, have you heard of this architect from Portugal called Eduardo Soto de Moura?
No.
Very interesting. But he often has houses like this. You should look. He's really good, actually. But honestly, he'll have a court that's right down there and nature coming up in it, which is sort of what you're doing. But he'll be really quite brutal with the stair. As in, you know, rather than a whole lot of steps, he'll sort of try and get it done in one action. So you come in, there's a stair down, there's that other facade in front of you, and tree coming up, pretty similar to what you're doing. But yours seems to be made of lots of little stairs. I couldn't quite understand all the lots of little stairs.
It was because I have this thing about, like, I sort of am one of these people that likes rules, so I've established sort of a set of rules for that.
All right, okay.
And so all of the, if you're looking through that kind of central part, all of the doors and windows are exactly the same. So when you're in the front hallway, I wanted the doors to be in the center so they'd open up, so I needed a platform in the center of the thing. So, and the house is...
Oh, yeah,
the
total.
A method here, Brendan.
It hasn't... No, I can see all the logic.
Well, look...
The same with the dining room.
I
thought, you know, it's like...
The
softer
on the... Oh, yeah.
It looks like it's going to be a great place. We couldn't think of anything.
There's nothing negative to say about this proposal.
Just in terms of the materials and finishes, are they actually on...
They're on every single elevation.
Yeah.
The materials are shown on the elevation.
Yeah, but there's no colour or actual...
Well, that's the actual picture.
Have you got a colour palette or something that we can actually link up that colour with a number or name or something?
Say that it's neutral, light neutral. I mean, I've called out the roof material, which is colour bond.
This is the question. Like, if you just, on the basis of this at the moment, if it wasn't conditioned, you could do sort of almost anything in that material without a colour.
Does it say on the elevation, does it say equitone?
But
you,
actually cladding the material in that?
The whole house is clad in this.
I just don't know how you would clad structure in that.
No, that's the wall.
Oh, not the frame.
So what do you clad the steel in?
Well,
timber.
Right now I'm doing something in a mighty kind of timbery thing. But I mean, if you guys weren't fussed one way or the other, whether it was steel or timber, then it would allow me to try to figure out if I could. It would allow me flexibility, saying that if you said it needs to be a light color. That it's not a black truss or something like that. That would allow me flexibility as I go into CC and design documentation and all the detailing. If the timber becomes,
I think you have to decide.
Yeah.
Personally, and this is probably not the same as the panel, I think if it's steel, express the steel. If it's timber, express the timber.
I tend to agree.
But cladding it in timber, I kind of think, how's that going to work? Because it's going to build up, it's going to get heavy. Then the ocean will wear away the timber.
I think there's a simple answer, and I think what we'll recommend to the council is that you provide a board of materials and colours, and that'll form part of the approval. I think that's the outcome. Now, if when you get to CC stage you find that something's not working for you, then you can always come back with a modification. And the council can deal with that themselves. Doesn't have to come back here. I understand the concern about locking everything in right now.
And also, I'm just trying to think about what would be the issues about it and try to make it try to be as safe.
Yeah.
It's controversial.
Yeah.
But it's not
still
a safe
allow me
building.
Some flexibility.
No, it's not. It's not a safe building.
There are some quite good books. But on coastal houses, where you see some steel houses or whatever, and you see how they've survived, because Ian Moore's done some really nice steel structures, Glenn Murcutt, whatever, and they're very close to the coast. Now that means they've treated them a certain way, and then you see others where they've done what you've done, where they've actually clad them or something like that. But I mean, I think that's a good idea because it gives you a bit of time to reflect.
And I think that'll give you some time to put that together because there's no... I mean, the council still has to make the determination. We're not making that tonight. We're just advising the council. And as I say, I can understand not wanting to lock in absolutely every detail and every colour, and that's fine, but it sounds like you're almost there in any case. So put that as a material and colour board.
Yeah.
Make that part of the consent, and then if at some time in the future at CC stage you think, that's going to be really difficult to achieve that colour or that cladding on the steel, come back with a modification.
Oh, I've got an idea.
Please, yes.
They'll give you the wrong advice. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I've got a suggestion.
The panel's saying they don't have a problem with it being steel.
Yeah.
I suppose, we would need to maybe have these plans amended to show that it's not been cladded with timber anymore.
Stick to your original idea.
I think so.
Because that would have to be re-notified, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd have to re-notify the neighbours.
Do you know, I've got another thought, that when you get into the detail, you might find that the engineers want a particular part of it to be steel, and otherwise they're quite happy with the rest to be timber. So then you're cladding the bit of steel that needs to be steel in the same timber that all the rest of it is. I think we've raised an issue for you. We shouldn't have.
It's one of those things that's been worrying because I don't know exactly when I get the detail exactly if it can work or exactly how I'm
going to
do it.
But you're going to find that.
I think, yeah.
If you
look,
get the consent, you can deal with the detail.
That's good advice.
Something later. Yep.
Yeah.
At least you've got the
consent.
So is
that how I would do it? If I find that I can't make the timber cladding, then I come back and answer the section 96.
Yeah.
And look, that's fairly common. Because
I'll leave it as timber cladding.
With most projects, it's not until you get... Okay.
Yeah, you'll probably get it to work. I went to a building the other day where even the fire stair and the lift shafts are timber.
Okay. Well, look, this is a very enjoyable discussion, but we really need to close it. And what I was going to say is, it's quite common when any project gets to CC stage that there's going to be changes, because that's the nature of the process. You know, there might be minor changes, some of which your certifier will be happy with, some of which they won't, some of which have to come back to council with a modification. Yeah. And that's not a big deal. And I think, as Elena says, secure this consent and then see where the details take you. All right, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I formally close the meeting at 7:03.